Eric Dawson's Talking Politics and Breaking Down the Issues. Coming to you live from Essex County, New Jersey, this is All Things Political.
Hey, good afternoon. This is All Things Political. This is Eric Dawson. Today is Tuesday, April 5th. I want to start the discussion. I'd like to jump right into it with the fact that it is primary day in Wisconsin. And so for all of you who are politicos and tuned with what's going on, there's a primary today in Wisconsin, and it's a very pivotal one. There are many people, and I've got a couple clips to show, and I make no bones about the fact that I am a Bernie Sanders supporter. And there is a concerted effort by the media to black out Bernie Sanders. And what I mean by that is they're giving an inordinate amount of press coverage to Hillary Clinton and to Donald Trump. And you don't hear much about Bernie Sanders, although Bernie Sanders is breaking all kinds of records, including the fact that he was nearly 60 points down in the polls and considered a fringe candidate by all accounts and was running as a social Democrat. And now he's erased that 60-point lead. Bernie Sanders is outraising Hillary Clinton with small donations. He said that he's got about 2 million or 3 million individual, I think it was 2 million individual donations equaling, or donors rather, making multiple contributions, over 6 million total contributions of averaging $27.50. In the month of March, Bernie Sanders raised over $44 million, but you don't hear any of that being widely reported. It's kind of cursory in terms of news coverage. It's an asterisk that you see for the most part. And all of this is taking place, and there is, in fact, a political revolution going on. And as will be mentioned in the clip that I'll play shortly, the saying that you've heard, the political revolution will not be televised, or the revolution will not be televised, is true. And the very fact that it won't be televised is that the revolution consists of people revolting against the establishment, and the media is a big part of that establishment. And it's really funny if you pay attention to, not funny, ha-ha funny, but funny meaning the emperor is being undressed as we watch this thing unfold on the national stage. When you look at the media and the way the media has been set up, the media has really been set up to be a buffer between people and the establishment, right? And to create an illusion that things are fine. It reminds me of the movie The Matrix, when you had all of these people who were plugged into The Matrix and they were just kind of living their lives. And there was this understanding based on what they all believed they were seeing and experiencing that this was real. But in fact, they were plugged into a construct that was pumping into their minds exactly what that construct wanted them to believe. And being unplugged from the matrix allows you to see that. And there were sentinels that were sent out and agents that were sent out to attack those who sought to destroy the matrix. And so it's really fascinating how life imitates art, and it's really crazy because you watch movies are made, and you don't really understand the significance of them, and then years go by. I remember, watching Dick Tracy cartoons and reading Dick Tracy comic books and comic strips, and now we see iPhone watches and such, right? So it's life imitating art. And in this respect, life is imitating art in that there is, in fact, a matrix. The challenge, though, is that the revolution is being won by millennials, those people who are not part of the old construct, those people who have not bought into the old paradigm, but those folks who have made good use of social media tools, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Snapchat, Instagram, and all of those tools have allowed millennials to be able to communicate with one another in a way that bypasses mainstream media. Mainstream media just hasn't caught up. It was fascinating for me as I watched the campaign unfold, especially when mainstream media, and for those of you who may be listening, don't know who I'm talking about in terms of mainstream media. I'm talking about when you turn television on, you watch CNN, you watch MSNBC, you watch C-SPAN, Channel 7, Channel 2, Channel 5, all of them. They're all owned by corporations who are in it to protect themselves, to protect their financial interests. And a lot of those interests are intertwined in political dealings. And so, these corporations also have lobbyists who are down in Washington lobbying for their interests. So it behooves them to pump information out that favors their perspective. So that's the mainstream media. And so you have this mainstream of information that's just constantly being pumped into the minds of people. Anyway, I find it fascinating, or I found it fascinating when I would wake up in the morning and turn on the television and I would see the news reporting social media news that had occurred the night before. That's when you realize things are shifting. When Donald Trump, using Twitter, would send out a tweet and it would get over a million, views and retweets and comments and such. Then the media had to come in, and that was news because you had over a million people that were now talking about something. And so the mainstream media was picking up and trying to run in front of the news that already occurred the night before. And so that's happening all over the place now. And it happened in New York at CNN recently, a few days ago, when, let Fox tell it, there were 200 supporters, Bernie Sanders supporters. Let CNN tell it, there were 2,000 supporters. But if you look online, and I love the Young Turks, I encourage everybody to follow their page. They were there reporting it, and there were certainly more than 200 and far more than even 2,000 supporters that were there in front of CNN arguing about the fact that CNN, along with the other mainstream media outlets, were not giving Bernie Sanders coverage. The other thing that I want to point out is that the CNN and MSNBC have also donated huge amounts of money to the Clinton campaign. And so I want you to think about that for a second. If you've got this station that is donating huge amounts of money to a particular candidate who, by her own admission, is the establishment candidate, and you have the media, which is part of the establishment, why would they want to provide any additional fuel to the fire that Bernie Sanders has lit under the feet of these millennials? So the millennials were out in force, and though mainstream media tried to black that event out, they couldn't because they were out there with their cell phones and they were tweeting and Facebooking and Instagramming and Snapchatting this event. And so CNN, to some extent, not to the full extent to which it should have been covered, but to some extent, CNN, in fact, did cover this event. But what I want to do right now is I want to play, a clip from that event that came from the Young Turks and let you hear exactly what that whole thing sounded like. Here we are.
Shoving down their throats, the people, they had all the actual facts. might not even be voting for them. It's not even just about Bernie. It's about fairness in journalism.
The puppeteers at this point, and they're committing media malpractice in a lot of ways.
We're here today because we're sick of the corporate media bias against Bernie Sanders and other candidates.
CNN's parent company is in the top 10 donors to Hillary Clinton's career. The media has not actually done all its research, that it is not listening to the people that are actually outside this building today. I feel like they are taking away what we're here for and we fight for.
CNN is not televising this event. So through social media and through you guys, the Young Turks, which is my favorite channel, we're getting that message out. So the more people that tweet, hashtag, hear this message, we're able to get that message out to everybody.
I'm so excited because you are the future of media. Just as we are the political revolution, you are the media revolution. You are much needed.
So, they are the future. I mean, not just the Young Turks, but anybody. Even this podcast that we do is the future of media. Blogs are the future of media. Printed newspapers are going to the wayside simply because at the point that information is printed, right, and then that newspaper is bundled and then put on a truck and then delivered to a newsstand, at the point that that occurs, that news is old. If you had an iPad and you pulled up the NewYorkTimes.com website and you got the paper, the physical paper in the morning, you would see that the news on the New York Times website is completely different. That's because that news is changing as it occurs. It's dynamic. So there's no way a printed piece of material could ever keep up. So the printed newspapers, for the most part, are being phased out. That's why a lot of them are struggling financially, because there is no revenue model for them. So the next thing you have is the Internet. And because the Internet is free, anybody can it should be free. In some countries, it's free. You know, you have to be able to access it, right? So you need Wi-Fi or some Internet connection. But the Internet itself, www. You can go on there if you had Internet access. So that's free. You can purchase a website for very, very little, and you can host it for very little. And then once you do that, I mean, I'm talking maybe $20 a month or less, you now can access billions of people with your content. And your content, if developed correctly and delivered correctly, could have as big an impact on hyperlocal. By hyperlocal, I mean communities, neighborhoods, blocks, or local, meaning cities, right, townships, some municipalities, or state or national news and information. So the revolution is truly here, and it will not be televised. But the revolution, you'll hear about it on blogs, on Internet radio shows, on websites. That's where you'll hear about it. And the other thing that I want to say is that in corporate America, we were always told that if you don't innovate, you die. And because the news media, I don't even know if it's a matter of them not wanting to innovate. The fact is they can't innovate, because the very purpose of them being here was to misinform the community of people who listen to it. So if they were going to innovate and be able to compete with people like the Young Turks, even All Things Political, or any other Internet radio show that's out there, independent Internet radio show where people are giving real, honest, truthful information, they would have to then give real, honest, truthful information. Because we live in a society here in America where the majority of people are disenfranchised. They believe that the government has rigged a system that benefits the wealthiest people, and that punishes the middle class, which is dwindling, and certainly the poor people. And no matter how much you want to pretend that it doesn't, right, when you look on television or you, and now the internet, right, social media or Facebook in particular accounts for 75% of the news that the average person receives. So when you see that, you see homeless people, you see poor people, you see people without health care, you see people having to work two jobs or two and a half jobs just to try to make ends meet. You see that. So in as much as they want to continue to try to paint this rosy picture, you see the pain that really exists, and it's hard to ignore. And mainstream media doesn't want to tell you that that really exists. So it's hard for them to innovate. And so they are dying. And like I said, media groups like the Young Turks, All Things Political, will be taking over, and we will be leading the revolution. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
North parents, my name is Jody Pittman, and I am running for the North Public Schools Advisory Board on April 19, 2016, line A7. We cannot allow politically driven candidates to pretend they are the voice of North's parents. We, the parents, must stand up and vote for the candidates who represent parents and children. Politics has ruined our district, so let's take it back by voting on April 19, 2016, A7. Jody Pittman. Thank you.
This is Eric Dawson. This is All Things Political. The call-in number is 646-668-2232. Again, the call-in number is 646-668-2232. So, you know, we talked a little bit about Bernie Sanders and what the media is doing to him. So I want to spend a little bit of time and talk about what the media is doing to Donald Trump. Not just the media, but the party itself, what they're doing to Donald Trump. There's an all-out assault on Donald Trump. And what I want to say to you is this. The all-out assault is simply because the mainstream media plays on both sides of the fence. So when we look and we see Democrat and Republican, and this is another thing that I believe they've just kind of sold to us, that you have Democrats and you have Republicans, and people have to take sides, and we have to argue and fight about who's going to be voting for whom. Am I a Democrat? Am I a Republican? And we become distracted, and so we don't see the issues. So here are the issues as I see them. You have both groups. Nobody's really talking about fiscal responsibility, right? So you have the Republicans talking about fiscal responsibility. You have Democrats talking about cutting budgets, whether people can raise taxes, or the other. The Democrats have an interest group, an interest group of people. Right, social programs, those kinds of things, right? And then you have the Republicans that have special interest groups, those are the corporations. And if the Republicans are in office, they're looking to set in place policies that will cater to their, their group of interest groups. And then if you have the Democrats in office, they want to do the exact same thing. So the money is still going to be spent. The argument is over who the money is going to be spent on. But we somehow don't see that. And when you look at the majority of people who are not benefiting from what the Republicans do, it baffles my mind that you have a situation where the middle class that's suffering doesn't vote in their best interest, but rather the mainstream media has convinced some of those people that being Republican is what Republican Party that is servicing their special interests, you know, the oil companies and all the other big, the big banks and all those kinds of things. Meanwhile, a lot of those people who call themselves Republicans are in the same boat that a lot of poor Democrats are in, where they don't have health care, they don't have decent paying jobs, and they're in debt up to their eyeballs because of college tuitions. So I don't understand how they do that. But anyway, so what has happened is there's now this all-out assault, and the Republican Party seeking to try to, wrestle this thing from Donald Trump by taking it to a convention. I mean, I can't for the life of me understand why there, isn't just an all-out revolution on both sides. So what the Republican Party wants to do is they want to court Ted Cruz for now, just to be able to beat up on Donald Trump. They've convinced Kasich to stay in the race to take more votes from Donald Trump. And then when they get to the convention, even if Donald Trump is 20 votes shy of the number of votes needed for the nomination, what they want to try to do is bring in a third person. So they're not going to take it to the ballot and then look at either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. What they're going to do is try to bring in an establishment candidate, because they don't believe that Ted Cruz is an establishment candidate. In fact, Ted Cruz is despised by most of his party. All you have to do is check the records to see that. So, they're holding their nose while they try to support him, but they realize that they can't support Donald Trump. He's imploding the Republican Party. So once again, you have, and the other thing that you have, and I want you to pay really close attention to this, you have what is typically called the liberal media bringing Donald Trump on their show and giving him a tremendous amount of free advertising, right? And in the beginning, I thought that they were bringing him on because they were trying to help him out. But what they're trying to do is they figure, we give him enough rope, he'll hang himself, right? We'll allow him to do enough interviews, we'll create enough sound bites that we can use against him. So they're not friendly media toward Donald Trump. It's just that Donald Trump is out-trumping them. So he shows up on their shows, and they think that he tripped up when he, talked about Mexicans sending rapists and drug dealers, right? Or that he, slipped up when he, talked about the Fox anchor at the debate, right? Or, any number of other things that we looked at and said, wow, that's really offensive. This is going to be the very end of Donald Trump. And so they figured by giving him all the exposure, he was going to implode. And then they would be able to move on with their establishment agenda. Donald Trump has defied all of the political pundits, and he hasn't imploded. And so he's, as this enigma continues to move closer and closer toward the convention, they've now said, and I want you to, I'm sorry that I'm, but if you listen, early on, they were floating the idea, and we call it in marketing test market, right? So they were test marketing this notion of a broker convention. So a month or two ago, they were talking about a broker convention, and they were testing to see whether the people who were listening to the media outlets were rebuking that idea. So they had the idea of doing it. But they wanted to run, some sort of an unofficial poll. So that's what they did, and they kept talking about it and talking about it. If they talk about it enough, people will finally just realize, okay, I guess we're going to have a broker convention. And that's what they've done. Look, I think not only are you going to have a revolution, which is taking place in terms of Bernie Sanders, I think you're going to have a revolt. And I'm concerned that Donald Trump is right, that you may actually have a riot if these millions and millions of people who voted for Donald Trump, because when they say they're anti-Donald Trump, understand, they're saying that they're anti these people. They're saying that they're not going to validate these people who have come out and who have donated to Donald Trump's campaign, either monetarily or with time and effort knocking on doors and canvassing. And so they're saying they're just going to dismiss all of these people as being ignorant and not knowing better, and that they're going to step in and make adult decisions for them. I'm telling you, that's going to lead to really, really, really big problems. What we're going to do is we're going to take a commercial break again, and when we come back, we're going to bring it closer to home, and we're going to talk about the announcement that Joe D. made in the paper that he would be considering running for governor. I know we've got Sweeney, we've got Fuller, and we've got Phil Murphy, who are also throwing their names in the ring. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
My name is Kim Gaddy, and I am a candidate on the Newark Unity Slate with Leah Owens and Tay Padilla for the Newark School Board, and we are asking for your vote. As a lifelong resident of Newark and proud alumni of Weequay High School, I understand the importance of a quality education in our public education system. As a parent of three, with my youngest currently attending Harriet Tubman, my belief in Newark's public schools has never wavered, nor will it. I have been confronted firsthand with the current realities of our educational system and like so many Newark mothers in our city. I have worked tirelessly to ensure that my children receive the best possible education and passionately believe that no Newark child should ever be denied a quality education. At this moment in our history, we must elect officials who are willing to prioritize our city and fight to empower our parents. It is imperative that we create a unified school board that puts the education of our children over the politics, ideology, or special interests. Together, we will ensure a smooth transition back to local control. We will fight for full funding from Trenton, and we will create effective strategies to confront our school budget. Vote for Kim Gaddy, Leah Owens, and Tay Padilla on April 19 for our children.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson. We're back with All Things Political. Today is Tuesday, April 5th. The call-in number is 646-668-2232. Again, it's 646-668-2232. On to the state politics. Governor Christie, who is who will be departing soon. I guess he's vying for some sort of, whether it's a VP pick, or something within the cabinet of Donald Trump if he were to be elected president. But what we have now is we have a few people who have kind of hinted at running for governor. We have former ambassador to Germany, and he was an ambassador under Barack Obama, President Obama, Ambassador Phil Murphy. And Phil Murphy has an organization, works through some organization called A New Way, which I think is pretty clever, right? So he's not running. It's kind of like an exploratory committee, so to speak. So he's just kind of talking about quality of life issues. He's holding meet and greets. I think he has one tonight, as a matter of fact, in South Orange. And so he holds these meet and greets and just kind of gets a sense of, you know, what people want. And he's gone all through northern Jersey, not so much southern Jersey, because he's going to have to support down in southern Jersey, I'm imagining, from George Norcross. But up north, he's, you know, kind of making his rounds. And then the other person that's on the horizon is Sweeney. And, you know, we're going to see, you know, what he does. Then you have Steve Phillip over in Jersey City. Now, the dynamic of Steve Phillip over in Jersey City is, you know, he made a play in 2013-14 during a mayoral race in Newark to partner with Mayor Ross J. Baraka, mayor of Newark, to help get him elected. A key cornerstone to trying to solidify Essex County. Right. We know if you are a Politico, that Democratic governors in particular, but most governors have to come through Essex County. And so Fulop is trying to shore that up. The challenge is going to be playing down in South Jersey. There's going to be no room for him to play down here. As I said, I believe that George Norcross is going to wind up supporting Ambassador Phil Murphy. And then finally, which was very interesting, is Essex County Executive Joe DiVincenzo mentioned in local paper, online paper, that he wasn't ruling out running for governor. Now, that's going to be very interesting. And personally, I don't think that he's going to run for governor, but we'll see what happens. I just don't see a path for him. He's done a great job. Well, some people will say that he did a great job. This is not an endorsement from me, but some people will say that he did a great, that he's doing a great job in Essex County. I guess we're in Essex County, you know, it depends on where you live. You know, there would be some in Newark and certainly Orange and East Orange who would question whether he's paid the necessary attention to African-American, black and brown communities in terms of resources. I know, you know, certainly if you go up into Essex Fells and areas like that, those people may, you know, be a little happier with the work that that the Essex County Executive is doing. But when you start to travel down, again, Central Jersey, Southern Jersey, those folks don't really know him, and they'll have to rely on his message. But you're going to have a formidable foe in George Norcross down in South Jersey. So, you know, it's too early to call, but that those are the dynamics that are working, at least as I see them in Essex County. And typically, you know, what has to happen when you start to look at, at a governor, you'll start to see, you know, more and more, especially in Essex County, the urban communities kind of come together and coalesce around a candidate. And I haven't seen that either. I've just kind of seen them, you know, milling around. So that, to me, right now is, you know, state politics in terms of county politics. It would be interesting if Essex County Executive Joe DiVincenzo decided to throw his name in the ring. And I'm not sure, I got to check on this, whether or not he has to forfeit his county exec seat in order to actually run at the point that he declares and decides to run for governor, or whether or not he'll be able to hold on to it. If he doesn't make it through the primary, he can stay county exec. I hate that. I believe that if you're going to, because if you really want to run for governor or any other office, then that means that you're ready to leave this office. And I think that voters should look at that and see that, well, you know what, this person doesn't really want to be here anymore. That's why they're trying to move to a higher office. But to lose the primary and then to just kind of tuck yourself back into this older office, I got to believe that, firstly, your heart's not there. And maybe you don't feel like you have the ability anymore to do it. And so I think the voters should pay really close attention, and maybe it could be some referendum, too, at some point that says, look, you know, if you decide that you're going to run for another office, you have to leave this office first and then commit yourself to run for that other office. But if he does decide to do that, I don't know who's on the horizon to fill in and to run for county executive. So that'll be very interesting. And, you know, and the other thing that we have to look at, especially here in Essex County, is, you know, everything runs on a party line. The party just kind of, you know, positions their candidates or their elected officials in key places. And then they just kind of turn that machine key when it's time for an election. And each of those people just kind of get folks to come out and vote for them. I hope that that changes too. I'm not saying that everybody who's on a county line, on a party line, is a bad person. Certainly there are some qualified people that are there, but then there's some people who are not qualified. You know, but I would ask the electorate to be concerned or to consider it to be an issue when the party can essentially put a nobody, somebody that nobody has ever seen, somebody who's never been in politics a day in their life, they can put them on the ticket. And then you'll see that our communities go and vote straight across that line. And you'll see this person get thousands and tens of thousands of votes, and nobody knows who they are. And people are taking somebody else's word on what their capabilities are. That's a problem, and we have to fix that. I would love to see a day before I leave this planet, which I hope is, you know, a long time away. I'm only 53. But I'd love to see a day where, even though people were on a line, that the electorate, by and large, would go down that line and say, we're pulling the levers, we're pushing the buttons now, and saying, well, you know what, I don't know this person. I haven't heard anything about this person, but I do know this person down here on what you would call line B, right? So I'm going to vote for that person. I'll vote for this person up here. And vote. I think that if we start to do that, we would send a clear message to politicians that the paradigm has shifted here in our communities, and that, you know, we're actually paying attention to who they're putting before us to vote. So that kind of concludes that. And now what I'm going to do is take one more break. And when I come back, we're going to get into this, contested race that's taking place in Orange, New Jersey. You have three candidates running for mayor. You have a host of candidates running for council seats as well, ward council seats. But you have three candidates running for mayor. You have the incumbent, Mayor Dwayne Warren, running for re-election. You have Councilman of the East Ward, I believe, Kerry Coley, who's running, Sergeant Coley, who's running for mayor, and you have Janice Morrell. So what we're going to do is take a break. When we come back, hopefully we'll be on with candidate Morrell. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
This is your dude, Spike Lee, and I know that you know the system is rigged. For too long, we've given up both the corporate puppets, sold the okey-doke. 99% of Americans were hurt by the Great Recession of 2008, and many are still recovering. And that's why I'm officially endorsing my brother Bernie Sanders. Bernie takes no money for corporations, nada, which means he is not on the take. And when Bernie gets in the White House, he will do the right thing. How can we be sure? Bernie was at the March on Washington with Dr. King. He was arrested in Chicago for protesting segregation and public schools. He fought for wealth and education equality throughout his whole career. No flipping, no flopping. Enough talk. Time for action. Hey, Bernie from Brooklyn, talk to the folks.
I'm Bernie Sanders, Democratic candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Bernie 2016, not the billionaire.
Hey, welcome back to All Things Political. This is Eric Dawson. Again, the date is Tuesday, April 5th. The calling number is 646-668-2232. And I want to get right to it because I know, typically during this time of the year, candidates are out knocking on doors and doing other kinds of things. So, I want to welcome candidate Janice Morrell to the line. And we'll get right into to finding out a little bit about her. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. How are you doing today?
Hey, you know what? I'm excited. I really am. I'm excited to have a excited to have you on. Excited to have a platform that connects local politicians to their constituency. And, hopefully we can learn a little bit about you as we approach. The election is when? May 10th?
May 10th, Tuesday, May 10th.
So we're what? Was that about 6 or 7 weeks away? Something like that? I don't know.
About 30 days away. I count
30 days away. Uh-oh.
Yeah,
okay.
About 30 days away.
So, when you count by, when you get to days, when you get away from months and weeks and you get to days, now you know you're in a sprint. So is that what you what it feels like out there on the campaign trail, like a sprint now?
Yes, it does. It does.
Okay.
It's invigorating talking to my neighbors across the city.
Mm-hmm.
They give good feedback on what has and has not been working, although I've been receiving that for a couple of years anyway.
Okay. So So what are they saying out there? What are they saying is working and is not working?
Well, they say the diminished police force, we've had experienced a decline in the number of our police, is not working for them, not working for any of us. Crime has increased as the number of police officers has declined. So that's not good. We need to have more police presence in town. We need to hire the police officers that the budget has called for.
Okay, so there is a budget that and an allocation, a line item in there for more police, and they just have not been hired?
Absolutely. The budgets that the city council has adopted each year from 2012 to now has called for an increase, the hiring, I should say, of police officers, so that as you lose police officers due to retirements, transfers, and whatever, you at least replace them and you increase the number of police on your force. And the budgets for the last couple of years have done that. Problem has been the administration hasn't hired the police officers. So you don't hire the police officers and people retire and leave for whatever reason, crime has increased. And I hear this from people block by block, different types of crime, carjackings we've had. We've had murders, which we didn't have. The number of murders, homicides in town has increased. Not good for our environment, not good for our quality of life at all.
Okay. So you know, or maybe you don't, but last week we had Mayor Duane Warren on, and what he said, so I'm a little confused, and maybe you can clear this up for the listeners, which is why I love platforms like this. He said that there were more public safety officers that were hired. He said that there were 11 new firefighters added in 2015 and 8 new police officers hired in 2015. Is that not true?
Let me address the police officers first, because this is what people are most concerned about. Number one, in 2013, after repeated requests from residents about the number of police officers that we had, the Bergen Record issued an OPA request, and they received an answer. And the answer was 123 police officers. And how do I know? Because I read through the database. They published the database, the names, the salary of just the police officers and firefighters. 123. Fast forward to September 30th, 2015, there were 93. And three of those 93 had actually turned around and retired. So at the end of the year, we were down to 90. And then with the complaints coming in to the community policing group, we have a committee, community policing group, there were 8 police officers, as he will say, that were hired. Problem, 3 went to the academy and were due to graduate in March or the beginning of April. And as I understand it, 2 are still in the academy, and the 3rd one, I'm not sure if they're in the academy or not. But the bottom line is you don't become a police officer. You're not entitled to carry a gun. You're not entitled to perform any of the duties, write tickets, go out and help people, identify as a police officer, until indeed you have graduated from the police academy. And as of this date, we don't have any graduates. So, yes, you may have hired 8 people, 3 may have gone to the academy, 5 may be actually working over in the Poe Hill Center, but they're doing civilian work. They are not police officers. So that's where we stand with the police officers.
Got it. Okay, so you know, I mean, I was going to ask you why, and you can answer this question, but, you know, why specifically are you running for mayor in Orange, and what do you think that you can do to address not only that issue, but some of the other issues that, you know, that you hear when you touch people in the community?
Okay, for years I routinely attended the city council meetings, taking notes and discussing issues with my fellow Orange residents and friends. Some of them suggested that I share the facts, because very often the information that was coming out during the past 3 years did not match up with the facts, and suggested I write op-ed articles or a column. And I did. I subsequently started to write a column for one of the local weekly newspapers, primarily focused upon issues affecting our cash flow. And in 2014, which was 2 years after starting to write regularly, longtime residents began to encourage me to run again for mayor. And they said, stick with it, run for mayor, and still write your column. Of course, I couldn't write the column, so I resigned, ceased writing the column, and decided to run for mayor, heeding the call of the people that we needed a change. We needed a change where residents were tired of not getting answers when they went to City Hall and attended the council meetings. Nobody would answer their questions. So from that perspective, I seriously considered, and here I am running again.
Okay. So aside from the public safety issue that we talked about, the lack of police officers, you said that there is an increase in crime. What other hot-button issues are there?
Well, there's the issue of we have a large number of abandoned and vacant houses. The foreclosure, the subprime market, has hit us greatly. I question whether people know how serious it has been in this town, although they do have a policy to board up the houses. The issue here is that we need to get the houses back on the tax rolls. We have people that are looking for affordable housing. We could take some of this housing, working with the banks, and have it so that people who qualify for affordable housing could purchase the housing. It does not need to stay vacant and languish. The longer it languishes, it then becomes undesirable housing that is in need of serious rehab. And rather than let that continue and drain the resources, because what you're talking about is you have the residents going up and, for instance, neighbors going to cut the grass and make sure it looks lived in so you don't have squatters or people just coming in and taking over property. We have our city has used its resources to come in, cut grass, and make sure that the area looks clean and maintained, but they have to bill back the owner if the owner actually owns if the former owner owns the housing, or they bill the banks that own the housing. Either way, it's not good for a neighborhood. I walked along a block where the woman who had moved there 3 years ago, she had neighbors. Today, she's occupying the only house still with any occupants on the block. Hers is the only house with a family on the block. The rest of the houses boarded up, closed.
Okay. So your plan
doesn't promote a good, vibrant neighborhood.
Okay. So your plan would be to create better relationships with banks to help people who are interested in buying these homes and rehabbing them to be able to do so.
Yes.
So they can get them back. Okay, excellent.
That and agencies, because there are agencies and organizations that do that.
Okay, that makes sense. Have there been any improvements? Right, because I know that when candidates go out, the idea is that you're trying to replace somebody who's currently in office. So there's some understanding that there's displeasure with something that they've done. Have there been any improvements during the last 3.5, almost 4 years since Mayor Warren has been in office?
He was fortunate in the sense that the prior mayor, Mayor Eldridge Hawkins, had plans in place, and what he's been doing is seeing the fruition of these plans. For instance, the Tony Galento had been in place prior to 2012 when Mayor Warren was elected. The approval to have the housing along the train tracks, the transit village concept, had been approved before he came into office. So what we have seen have been the improvements that a prior administration has planned for. What we have not seen are new initiatives, if you will, that this administration has developed.
Okay. So there are a couple more questions, but I'm looking at the time and I'm trying to get as many of them in that I have prepared for you. Another big issue that I saw going on in Orange was the why. That there, you know, it was controversial, right, to say the least. What's happening there now?
That's actually on the agenda tonight for the City Council. It will be interesting to see if the City Council does indeed adopt and approve the purchase of the Y. And the reason I say it would be interesting is because the Y is in bankruptcy court. And the documents
okay.
that have been filed in the court materially differ from the documents that have been provided to the members of the City Council members. Those documents should match. If you've obtained the approval from the City Council and you're now you're saying that the City Council has approved it, the documents should be the same documents. You should not be looking at documents that when you read them, they don't match in verbiage or in punctuation, because quite frankly, you could have a comma in one spot in one document and a comma in another spot in another document, and that changes the meaning between the two documents. What is the City Council voting on?
Okay. So I want to get to a couple more things and give you time to talk about them. There, and I saw this, and then it was on social media. There was this talk about water. Two issues. One, there was a flyer that went out. I don't know who put it out, but it said that the Orange water, it likened it to Flint, Michigan, right? So everybody's, you know, kind of, you know, on edge now with the idea of, you know, infrastructural issues in, you know, urban communities and the delivery system, meaning the lead pipes, maybe, you know, delivering, you know, lead contaminated water. And so this flyer, you know, kind of hinted to that, but then it also talked about the selling of the water, the privatizing of the water. Now, again, you know, I did ask Mayor Warren that because that was out there, and he said that he has no intentions on privatizing the water. To the best of your knowledge, what information do you have about that? And if you became the mayor, you know, what direction would you go with the water?
First of all, let me state that back in 2003, the city
mm-hmm.
of Orange contracted a gang with another company to manage its water system. That means the infrastructure as well as the delivery of water to our houses and places that we live. Okay, fast forward. 2013, that contract expired. Well, it's just like when you purchase car insurance. If you know your car insurance is going to expire in June and you want to take a look to see what the best deals are, you don't wait until the contract expires for your car insurance. You start looking early. Well, here we are. We've been working with United Water has been managing our water system on a month-to-month basis. And the administration finally issues an RFP, a request for proposals, to companies, asking them to respond and let us know what it would cost to manage our water system. Now, according to a public forum that we had, The administration did not send an RFP to our current vendor, who has been managing the water system for the past 10 years, and on a month-to-month basis since 2013, and presents this to the city council, awarding the contract to the lowest bidder. Okay, we attend a forum, and we find out there's a difference in what they apparently had negotiated in terms of the RFP. The current vendor responded to everything on the RFP, and the successful bidder did not respond to every item on the RFP because they were presented as optional. Well, the other thing that we find out from the current contractor, the vendor, was that they didn't receive the RFP in the mail. The business development department within United Waters Company happened to notice that there was an RFP advertised, alerted the person who manages the system for Orange, and they submitted a bid within a couple of days, which turned out to be a higher bid, but it covered all the areas, including optional ones. Came in as a higher bid. Now, the issue of the quality of water is extremely important and very disturbing to all of us here in Orange. Three of our wells were shut down. As I understand it, two of them are still closed. The basic question ought to be...
Now, when were they shut down? When were they shut down?
One was shut down... two of them were shut down last year.
Okay.
And one was shut down before.
So they've been shut down
under
this current administration.
Correct. But we were never told that the wells were shut down. While it may seem like a minor thing, they were shut down because of contaminants. And there's a letter from the DOP, New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, stating that the results of the test should be used to develop plans to address the water quality. We were never told that there was any issue with the water quality. You have to routinely ask for information from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, which will gladly supply it to you, about the testing of the water. We're not routinely notified about what the results are, but yet there is somebody in City Hall that does receive the results of testing the water. But to go out and say that because of a man-made material that we have water like Flint, I think that was being irresponsible. And apparently one of the teams that are running for election did put that out, that we might have a Flint, Michigan situation here. Well, no, it's not quite like Flint, Michigan, but it does raise the concerns. We should know whether or not we have safe drinking water. We should know whether or not we have water to bathe in without being concerned about any harm to our skin. The issue there is that the administration didn't notify us. If you have a problem with the contractor who has serviced us for 10 years, don't you think that our administration should have questioned the contractor as they went along with the contract and not just decide unilaterally not to give or not to send an RFP? Therefore, they would have never responded to an RFP had it not been for somebody in the company noticing that one had been advertised. It just stinks to high heaven. It looks like it was deliberate, that there was no forethought, well, that there was no contacting of the contractor, and that they wanted to go with this smaller company, which, by the way, has never handled, according to the words of the executive vice president, an urban water system. Which means when they say urban, you're talking about an older water system. We have an older water system with old pipes, old infrastructure that's in need of maintenance.
Right.
There are just too many things. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so I know we scheduled the show for 8, but if you could stay on, we can run the show longer because there are a couple other questions. So the people, we do have a bunch of people who are listening to the show. I can see them on my computer monitor. So I would ask you all to stay on if you'd like to, if we can have you for
sure.
a few more minutes. That would be great.
Sure.
So we were talking about the literature, right? And so there's literature out there, and there's stuff over on social media now, not just dealing with the flyer about the water, but there's a flyer out there that says that Mayor Warren is a Republican. There's another flyer out there. Oh, no, actually, there are videos out there that expose Kerry Coley's record on the police department, and then that carried itself to articles on blogs and on NJ.com. And so there's all of this feuding going on. Well, there are two questions I want to ask you. What do you think about that feuding that's taking place with this negative campaigning? That's one. And then the second part of the question is, do you believe that Dwayne Warren is a Republican?
In terms of the, I won't call it feuding, I'll call it what it is. It's mudslinging.
Okay.
But unfortunately, what each one has had to say about each other has not been untrue. But it does not advance, it does not address the actual problems we're having here in town. It does not address how the solutions can be reached. What I'm
Hello?
Concerned about is the problems that we have and how we're going to solve them, how we're going to fix them. I'm not concerned about the negative comments they have to make about each other.
Okay. So you just said that they're all true. So the comments are that Kerry Coley is a bad cop, that he's an abusive cop, that he's unqualified, he's uneducated, he's all of these things. And then on the other side, the other guy is saying that, you know, he's a Republican, he's a Christocrat, he's, you know, he's selling your water, he's doing a so your assertion is that all of those things are true about both of those
My
guys?
Assertion
because,
is go ahead.
No. I mean, because you know, I would say that it speaks to character. So in as much as we would try to figure out, you know, how to fix the problems, you want to make sure you have a person of good character in there working on the problem. So that's why I'm asking you if you believe that those things are true.
Well, first of all, by Coley's own admission, the release of his internal affairs folder, the contents of it, appear to be genuine and accurate. So it does raise my hackles. It should raise people's hackles in terms of the character and the type of person that would be elected to leadership. But I will also say, I don't believe that anyone's internal affairs investigations unit should have been put out there for the public to see. I want to know who actually pulled the jacket. I want to know who did it. That gives me a better indication of what his opponent who did this, where their ethics are. It's unethical. It's illegal.
Okay.
Now,
would you say, and I don't want to make this about, but I am a stickler on character, right? So if we find out, and you see it in a lot of different places, like you got the guy, Eric Snowden, who's now in hiding. He can't come back. But he provided information that was very useful for American citizens to know how our data is being mined by government agencies, right? So in as much as one might say, well, it was illegal what he did, it's been very useful. And there have been other cases where folks have functioned as whistleblowers to provide necessary information so that we had an understanding of what was going on. So in as much as the person or people, you know, who did this, I guess it would be illegal to do it. If, in fact, what's in the jacket is true, you know, what was the end to the means worthwhile?
I think so in this case, because it does go to the issue of character. I would hope that we would find some more information. When I looked at the listing, he had been on the force 20 years, and there were, or 25 years, and there were 25 instances in one version that I saw. That means one per year. I then wondered, what else has there been that people may not have complained about or brought to the attention of the police department? That I was concerned about that. But it does bespeak of the character. I question the fitness of the person to lead.
Okay.
I'm concerned about that.
All right. And so your overall assessment, having, you know, having seen, you know, not just this administration, but the prior administration, right? Because, you know, you had the Hawkins administration, and then that was, you know, followed up by. So over the last 12 years, you've had three different mayors, right?
We've had Mims Hackett.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had
then
Eldridge
Hawkins.
And now
then,
we
and
have Warren. Dwayne
right.
Warren.
So there's no real continuity that the Township of Orange has been able to establish, because I imagine with each administration, there's some sort of an upheaval in terms of the staffing and direction that they want to take the town in. So how would you assess Orange at this point?
I want to point out that Mims had been in office for three terms, so there was some stability there. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, in terms of delivery of services, which is the common complaint that I hear from people, if I had to put it down into a category, we need to take a look at the personnel. Do we have adequate staffing to deliver the services? Based upon what I've seen, it appears as though where some people may have left departments, that when new hires were brought in, they weren't hired back into the departments. We have some positions that don't appear on anybody's table of organization and certainly not in our ordinances insofar as staffing is concerned. So, yes, we have to take a look at that. We have to see that we are actually have sufficient employees to deliver the services. It also means interviewing, and I'm basically talking about an operational audit. It also means interviewing the staff members to make sure that what they're asked to do is actually contributing to the delivery of essential services or to the delivery of whatever the end product is supposed to be.
Okay. So I have two more questions, and then you know, I'll ask you to, you know, just kind of, you know, say what you want to say, you know, to our listening audience. What is the single biggest complaint or issue facing Orange residents right now?
People complain about the taxes. They're talking about, for instance, the last tax increase we had was 4.4%. That certainly falls outside of the guidelines of the 2% cap that the current governor, Chris Christie, has stated that each town and passed a law that each town should adhere to. That's disturbing.
What's disturbing, however, is when you take a look at how we end up with these increases. We've ended up with these increases because the budget's been introduced late. The budget has been passed late. You cannot really control a budget if the budget is being introduced and passed 6, 7, 8 months after the new fiscal year has begun. You don't have control over a budget that way.
Okay. So,
and
my last, go ahead, I'm sorry.
You need to be able to monitor the cash flow. You need to be able to control the cash flow. And insofar as that is concerned, you do that with a budget. I'm sure at the beginning of any budgetary year for your household, you don't sit there and say, oh, well, not sure how much money we're going to need, so let's go ahead and work based upon what we did a year ago that month. When in fact, let's say it's a family where the income has decreased, you can't operate that way. It's like we have an open-ended wallet that the city can come in and just plunk whatever it determines that it wants, not determines what it needs in order to deliver services, and that's a problem.
Okay. So May 10th comes, polls close, Janice Morrell sees that she's won. The inauguration takes place and you're in office. What is your first line of business?
An operational audit. A good BA.
Okay.
A good finance director. I'm looking for employees who will look at me and say, mm-mm. You may think that that's the way it has to be done, but let's take a look at some alternatives. What you're suggesting may not be the best way. I don't have a monopoly on intelligence, experience. If you go out and hire the best BA available, that person is going to have some experience in areas that none of us have. You ought to have a good BA. You ought to have someone who has had the experience of being a BA or an assistant BA. And in that way, you can take advantage of those expertise. This should not be any, hate to say it, on-the-job training.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm big on provoking accountability. So, I'm not a big fan of bringing people in and letting them train. They should come prepared. Most of my background has been in corporate America, and we don't get any on-the-job training there. You have to be qualified to do the job that you're being hired to do. So with the with our show now coming to an end, what is your, I guess 30-second, pitch when you go to the door and you're asking voters to vote for you? Because, we've got quite a few listeners that are listening, and over the next couple of days, they'll be listening to the podcast. So what would you say to them in terms of voting for Janice Morrell?
I'm an experienced manager. While this may be a part-time job, we have ended up in a place where you need the attention, full-time attention, of a mayor. And I'm willing to do that for the next 6 to 9 months, to get our house in order so that we can deliver the services, so that we can deliver the services with a smile, so that we can deliver the services where people will be glad to walk out and say, ooh, my streets are clean. My garbage was picked up early. We have police. We see them in the neighborhoods. We have increased the number of police. Ooh, our fire department, our number of firefighters have increased. We have a public works department, and they're out here. Oh, snow removal? No problem this year. looking for excellence in public service.
Excellent.
And granted, it's paid public service.
Well, Janice, I appreciate you joining us. You're welcome back anytime you want to. You've got my number. Just give me a call. Say, hey, Eric, I got some things to talk about to share with the residents of Orange, and I'll make sure we get you on. That's what this platform is all about. I wish you all a luck on May 10th. And, folks, make sure you get out and vote. Janice Morrell, thanks again.
Thank you for having me. And you have a good evening.
You've been listening to Eric Dawson talking politics and breaking down the issues. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for All Things Political.